America are facing very, very tough times. And the basic reason a lot of those people are in serious trouble today is because they had no concept as to how to use their money. Now, the Bible says five things about money. The first thing we need to talk about is earning. And the Bible is very, very clear that we, and from Genesis 3:19, we are to earn our bread by the sweat of our brow. Work is not just a necessary evil. Work is ordained of God. That's Genesis 3:19. You see words in Genesis like God told us, He gave us the earth and said, subdue it. You see that in Genesis 1:28. We're to subdue the earth. Therefore, you know, when people have questions about, you know, like using medicines or should we, you know, is this a matter of lack of faith and all that? Let me tell you, God told us to subdue this earth. Anything we learn about medicines or anything like that is just in obedience to God. The medical technology and everything we have that we should use when you're sick, you still trust God for healing, but you use medicines and things because God told us to subdue this earth. You see things in, like in Genesis 2:5, we're to rule over this earth. Genesis 2:19, God gave Adam the name of the job. Come right in. Yes, this is about money. The wicked subject. He gave him the job of naming the animals. And so work is normally how God provides for us. Now let me say this. Don't always limit God to just what you make. In other words, like coming on the trip to here to Glorieta. Do you have the money? Well, no, you may not have the money. The question is, does God want you to go? And there's times that God will want to provide for you over and above the salary that you make. So don't just limit God necessarily to your salary, but that's normally the way He provides for us. And incidentally, sometimes you know, the missionary comes home, he needs a car. So he prays and some layman or someone give him a car, so he gets to stand up in church and tell how God gave him a car. And we think, wow, that's really spiritual. But here you are, a layman, you're working, and you save for months to buy a car. Which one is more spiritual? One is not more spiritual than the other. You know, people couldn't be in full-time work if it weren't for the layman who worked and paid for it. And God loves laymen because He made a lot of them. And that's where probably most of you are going to wind up in life. Don't ever feel like you're a second-class citizen. Because you work, you manage your money well, you buy your own cars. The missionary may come home and pray and give him a car, but let me tell you, God didn't just create that car and drop it out of heaven one day. The reason He has cars, because there are people like you that work, and you buy that car and you help. And so, it's very honorable to work. It's very honorable to work. God ordained it. When you are working, you are doing what God asks you to do. Now, when it comes to earning, see, that's why we're so against the lottery. We're so against anything where you're getting your money by chance. See, God intended for you to get your money by working. Now, we know several things about work that the Bible teaches. One, it teaches that we work hard. Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hands find to do, do it with your might. And so we work hard. That's one of the principles. In anything you do in life, you want to become a responsible, hard worker. Now, Ken Humphreys, who's a good friend and a farmer alum, and he says when you get a job, when you get out in the world and you get a job, first thing you do, the first day, you show up about 10 minutes early. Don't just walk in if you have to be there at 8 o'clock. You just show up 5 to 10 minutes early. If you're supposed to get off at 5, you stay about 5 or 10 minutes late. Said, it will be amazing what this will do. Because to your boss and people, it shows that you're there to work. Also, be very, very careful about, my dad used to call it, because he was a carpenter, chiseling on another man's time. He was a carpenter. And I worked with him some as a boy back home, and he'd say, "Son, these people are paying us," and he got paid by the hour. "They are paying us to work 8 hours a day. So we don't get to the job and unload our tools on that man's time. He's not paying me to unload our tools. So we will get there before 8 o'clock. We will have our tools unloaded. And at 8 o'clock, we will work. And we will work until 5 o'clock because that's what he's paying us to do. And then we will gather up our tools. And then we will go home." You know, when my dad worked, I mean, when he was 75 years old, he was still picking up his hammer and going to work. And when a lot of carpenters couldn't get work, my dad always had more than he could do. And people had come to him and say, "I want you to build this addition onto my room, or I want you to build cabinets." And he'd say, "Man, I can't get to that. It'll be 3 months." I said, "That's fine. We wouldn't have anybody else in the town to do it but you. And we'll wait until you're ready." Because he developed a work ethic. And that's one of the things you want to do. You want to work hard. That's why when you're a student, you need to learn to work hard. You are never going to succeed in anything in life. I don't care what endeavor, what field you go into, unless you want to work hard. Now let me balance it by saying this. That does not mean work all the time. See? And a lot of men get a job to provide for their family, and the first thing you know, they're working all the time, and then they neglect the wife and the family, and they lose them. So I'm talking about, you don't have much over 8 hours a day to sell. Now, there are times in life, either the company's where you are, something you may have to work some long hours. If you're an accountant, you may work pretty hard the last 2 weeks before March. I mean, I know a fellow, he's an accountant, his wife says he leaves about 8 o'clock in the morning, he's at work, and I'll see him about 10 at night. And it'll be that way for a couple of weeks. And there are times in life that will be true, that you may have to work long. But you don't want to work that way all the time, okay? But one principle, we want to work hard, and we want to work as unto the Lord. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, you know, do your work heartily as unto the Lord. It's not just that I'm working for the boss. Like one lady, Bill Gothard tells the story of this girl who was working in a dress shop. And when there weren't any customers around, she'd go around and straighten the racks. She was always working. And one day one of the girls said to her, "You don't have to work like this. The boss is not around." And she said, "Oh, I work for a different boss." And you know, I can remember when I was a boy working in the summer in the cotton fields. And that boss would hoe with us. And so it was hoeing. And I mean, it was hot walking down those fields. And boy, in the loose sand and thing, it was very, very tiring. And we would work 8 hours a day. And we made 65 cents an hour. And so I worked at that time, a lot of times, sometimes for 60. I got a raise to 65. And I could work 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. I went home with $36. And so, but when he was with me, we'd get out to the end of the row, and sometime he'd say, "Let's sit down just a minute, get a drink, sit down a minute." And sometime when he was with me, he'd do that. But when he would go to town, I determined, I will never sit down in this field. I will get to the end of the row, I'll get a drink of water, I'll turn around, because I don't want one of the farmers to drive by and say, "Yeah, I saw that lazy kid," he said, "sitting down out in the field." I just determined, if he's with me, I would do that, but I will not when he's not. Let me tell you, if you will work, if you will develop a strong work ethic, it will serve you well all of your life. So we want to work. We want to work hard. We want to work as unto the Lord. Whatever job you have, you're working as unto the Lord. And that's going to give you an avenue to witness. And it's also going to be primarily the way God provides for you. So, and there are a number of reasons to work. We work to provide. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if a man does not provide for his own house, he's worse than an unbeliever. So we work to provide for our families, We work to help others. Paul said in Acts 20, 33 and 34, these hands have ministered to my necessities and those that were with me. He said in 1 Thessalonians 3:10, he worked night and day. And he's talking about physical work. He worked hard at times to provide for himself and even to help some people that were ministering with him. To provide for the weak, the poor, to be able to give. There are a lot of reasons we ought to work. Work is not a necessary evil. It is ordained of God. Okay? Now, any question about work? We got to work, right? And right now, that's why it's so good for you to develop habits of working hard when you're in school. Okay? Okay. Now, there are times that you may have a job, like here's a fellow, he has to sit here at a desk and answer. He routes trucks. And so his job is to sit right there and just answer the phone. And there's times that he doesn't have anything else to do. Tremendous time to review verses. You know, you ought to always have your verse pack with you. And at times, and sometimes there are times at work that you can do things and it's okay with your boss. And I'd say if so, I mean, I see people that have jobs and I think, my soul and body, you could be memorizing 8 verses a day. You know, they really could with the job they have and still doing what they're supposed to do. So don't feel guilty about that. You might want to talk to your boss and say, sir, I want to do an excellent job. And sometimes ask for something else to do. Like I had a lawyer to call a number of years ago to BSU, and he said, Max, I need a secretary. Can you send me another girl like the last one you sent? And I said, well, I don't know. I can try. And he said, you know, and he told me this story. He said, I'm a young lawyer. He said, I was having a hard time making it. And he said, this girl from the BSU came to work for me. He said, I was hiring a crew to come in at night and vacuum and clean the offices. And said, one day she said to me, sir, do you have anything else for me to type or anything else I can do? And he said, no. She said, where's the vacuum cleaner? Do you mind if I just clean the offices? There's nobody here. And she started cleaning the offices and things and said, sir, I know it's, you know, kind of tough on you. You don't need to hire somebody come in here and vacuum and dust and empty the trash cans. I'd be delighted to do that for you. And so she started using her time. Well, I mean, this guy, anytime he needs a secretary, you know who he called? He called the BSU. He said, I want someone like that. And this girl was a tremendous blessing. That guy still remembers that and is one of our dear friends till this day because of a girl who he was paying her to work. And when she couldn't find anything, she asked other things that she could do. And that's one of the things that you can do. Try to find other things you can do, and if not, then use the time otherwise. Okay?
I know if you're working too much, I'm in a medical field, and I'll have patients that are in the hospital that I'll have to go into. And I know that that's going to be demanding of my time. But yet, I don't want to neglect my family concept.
Well, let me tell you a story. A fellow that I had live in a training program with me when he was 18. He later became a medical doctor. He's in Beaumont, Texas, and I went and visited him. Here's what he told me. He gets up early. I mean, he arises early. He does not neglect his time. He's a lot of mornings I'm up by 4. 5 is late for him. And he'll have an hour, hour and a half or so in the Word before he goes to work. He said, I'm never a minute late to my office, and I'm in my office at 8 o'clock. And he said, I go by the hospital and see my patients before I go into the office. Because if not, he says, here's what happens. Here's this person in the hospital, and their family's coming in to visit him. Said, well, what's the doctor say? Well, I don't know. I hadn't seen him. And he said, then if I go by and visit my patients after I leave the office at 5 o'clock, I find that a lot of them have bad attitudes. People have been asking him all day, how are you doing? When are you going to get to go home? They have no idea. So he said, I've already made my rounds before I ever get to the hospital. He said, this way, people come in and say, well, was it not? Well, he was just by to see me. He said, it's amazing what it does. And he said, then, he said, I don't stay late. And one of the things he did as a doctor, when a patient, he saw a patient, and he gave his prescription, said, I want you to take these two pills twice a day or whatever. He has a dictating machine right outside his door. He's got a number of his examining rooms. When that patient's with him, he tells him in his office what he wants him to do. And then when he goes, he says, stop here just a minute. He picks up his dictating machine and said, Mary Jones, I want her to take this drug two times a week. If there's any problem, I want her to call. They hear the instruction twice, plus it's already on his dictating machine. So he doesn't have to stay late and dictate his records. As a result of it, there was a lawsuit because the lady had cancer. She didn't do what he told her, and he had records. And not only that, but he's a Christian. And here's a man that has cancer, and he says to him, sir, I'm going to do the very best I can for you. And here's the medicine I want you to take, but you know what else I'd like for you to do? I'd like you to read the 23rd Psalm seven times a day. And that's on his medical record. He has a tremendous ministry. But that's the way. But then at 5 o'clock, he goes home. He has dinner with his family. And he's there for the evening. He does not need to go back to the hospital or anything. I thought, this guy has thought it through. So I think things like that. There are ways in which you can do things. Now, I know if you're, you know, delivering babies, they don't come on schedule. But there are other things that you figure time and schedule where you can be with your family and things. But you have to be careful in some professions because it's awful easy to neglect them. Okay? All right, let's move on and talk about another thing that I think you need to learn early in life, and that is about saving. As I mentioned, you know, the fellow I read to you about Enron making $108,000 a year, and when Enron fell, he had no savings. Can you imagine that, making $108,000 a year and no savings? Spending $7 to $10 every day for lunch. You know, normally I take my lunch because I'm married. Sandra enjoys going out to eat sometime. So if I'm going to go out to eat, I'm going to go out to eat with her. I knew a fella on a church staff, and every day the staff decided, well, where are we going to go eat today? They spent untold money. And I thought, you know, I bet he rarely takes his wife out because he goes out to eat every day at lunch. And so find ways to save. You know, Proverbs 22:3 and 27:12 say, a wise man foresees the evil and hides himself. The simple pass on and suffer for it. That's exactly what we're reading about in the paper, you know, this week as to what's happened. And so, the day's going to come, you're going to need more money than just that you make today. Like one lady said, you know, I think we could make it every month if it weren't for these emergencies. So my friend says, what do you mean emergencies? She said, well, last month it was a starter on our car. This month it was four new tires. And so he said to her, can I ask you a question? How many miles did those tires have on them? She said, well, over 40,000. He said, that wasn't an emergency. And see, unless you save ahead, you're not going to have the money you need for short-term things. And also, you need to be saving for long-term. People are living longer today. You may live 20, 30 years after you retire, or maybe even after you have to retire. And it's later in life when you have more medical bills and expenses go up in some ways. So you need to know that and begin to save. And that is not wrong. That is not a lack of faith to be able to save against future expenses. Unless you... Now, what do most Americans do when they have expenses and they don't have the money? Credit card, debt. We're going to talk about that in a little bit about debt. Because they've not saved, and now you have to have something, the only way to get it is to go in debt. And that is a terrible, terrible trap, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. You know the Good Samaritan? He goes along one day, and he sees this man over here. He picks him up. He takes him to this inn, and he tells the innkeeper, you take care of him. here's some money, you take care of him. And if it's not enough money, when I come back, I'll pay you some more. Now that guy could not have done that if he didn't have some money. He would not have been able to meet that pressing need. That's another reason we want to work and we want to save. Because sometimes there's a pressing need that you will have or someone else will have that you can meet if you have some savings. Now I know you're in a stage right now in life when most of you are just making it day to day. I understand that. But one of the things we're trying to learn is for the future. Now let me say this to you. There's a warning. When we talk about money, you know, the Bible says, and Jesus says, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust corrupt, and thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust does not corrupt, and thieves do not break through and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Now, there are tremendous warnings in the Bible about a loving of money. And in 1 Timothy 6, that passage 6 through 11 in there, we're told, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And that's loving money. We don't want to love it, and we don't want to just lay it up and treasure it. Now, there's a difference between laying up, like Jesus is talking about, and saving. And only God, I think, can show you where that difference is. Because there's some people that have millions laid up, but they're not sure they're going to have enough. See? It's right to save. It is wrong just to store up where your focus becomes, how much do I have? When you're saving money, it's for a purpose. I'm saving this to be able to meet needs, to be able to help me, help people, to be able to give. Now, here's a verse you need, and this is a great one for you. Psalms 62:10. It says, if riches increase. See, that's written for poor people, okay? Because right now you don't have them. See, it says, if they increase, set not your heart upon them. So, maybe you don't have much at all. Maybe you're just struggling, going through school. Some of you have school debt. And we'll talk about that some later. Okay? But if the day comes that you have much more, don't set your heart on it. And some of you during your lifetime, now this may surprise you, but some of you during your lifetime, God will pour millions through your hand. You think about that. A man that makes $100,000 a year, he worked for 10 years, that's $1 million that will go through his hand. Now, one of the things you want to determine, and God, I think, lets us start out in life, most of us, and especially when you begin to get away from home where mom and dad are not taking care of everything, it's a time when you don't have much. And I think God loves that. Because now you learn some things about trust. You learn some things about saving, about wise spending, and using your money wisely so that when it begins to increase, you don't necessarily always raise your standard of living with your increase. For example, let's suppose, and I'm just going to use some figures, say a guy's making $35,000 a year and he's able to get by on that. And then he gets a raise to $40,000. Well, normally what happens in America, our lifestyle just moves with our salary. See, this guy was making $108,000. He had no savings. What had happened? He's spending $7 to $10 a day for lunch. He's buying a house that probably is more than he needs. And every time they get an increase, their lifestyle goes up. You read of some of these people, movie stars and people, and they make all this money. Well, then they've got a house on the beach. They've got a house in Aspen, and it doesn't make any difference how much they make. I read an article a few years ago in America that says it makes no difference. Now, this was probably 20 years ago, where people in America were making $8,000 a year or $50,000 a year. The study just happened to be in that frame. People were in trouble. And people are in trouble today regardless of the amount of money they make. Now, what you don't want to do is that your lifestyle, just follow your salary. For example, you only need so many pairs of shoes. Nobody alive needs 100 pairs of shoes. You just don't need 100 pairs of shoes. Can you afford it? Yes, but you don't need it. And so, And the day comes, like if all of a sudden I had $10 million, I promise you, I would not eat very many $15 steaks. Because you don't need many $15 steaks in the first place. And you don't want your lifestyle to just constantly follow your salary. There are people in America that could be giving 50% of their income to the Lord's work, and they really should. And they still have all they need for life. Now, I'm not talking about not going skiing some. I'm not talking about not having some fun, not having vacations. Because 1 Timothy 6:17 says God has given us all things richly to enjoy. So it's fine to spend some money having fun, vacations, things like that. But also, you need to be careful. I know, like I knew a doctor, and he's flying to Hawaii 1 week, and then you'd call his office, and the next month he's in Aspen skiing. Next month he's somewhere else. And you know, this guy made a tremendous amount of money, but did very, very little for it. He's dead now, and accomplished very little for God when he could have really done something significant. So one of the things you want to learn is about saving. Always live on less than you make. Just make that a rule. I'm going to save something. Always live on less than you make. You may think, well, I'm barely making enough to live. Well, figure out if you can cut out a Coke. Pass that Coke machine. Don't eat out as much. One of the things that a lot of singles spend a tremendous amount of money on, especially if they're single and they get out and get a job, it's on eating out. And watch that, because I'm not saying you never eat out, but you can spend a tremendous amount of time. Also buying foods that are already prepared, things like that. Just watch it, because you can spend a great deal of money there. And so you want to learn to save. That's one of the things you want to learn early in life. If you will learn to save on whatever you're making, then as your salary increases, you're able to save more. And it's always with a purpose in mind. I may have some money in a bank, but you always hold it with an open hand. And if God says, I want you to take $1,000 of that, and I want you to give. You know, some of those of you from OU know that just a few days ago we lacked $18,700 that students had said, I don't have the money to come. Somebody, I need some help. And we were lacking, well, just a little over a week ago, $18,700. Well, we opened the mail, we pray. Here's an alum. A few years ago, he sent in $1,000. Another guy sent in $1,500. Another person sent in $500. Some of them send in lesser amounts. But there are people that would not be at this conference this week if it were not for some people who had saved some money and were able to give. Okay? So saving is very, very important. So we've talked about earning. We've talked about saving. And now let's talk about spending. One of the first things to learn in life is to resist advertising. Proverbs 14:15. A simple man believes every word. See? A simple man believes every word. I mean, people can come in and, I mean, you know, millions of dollars are spent on advertising. The businesses and people, the only way they make money is for people to buy their products. They spend millions trying to make you dissatisfied with what you have. I mean, the car you have is just not new enough. See? Incidentally, you know the most expensive perfume in America? The smell of a new car. But really, they're constantly, the shoes you have are just not as up to date as they ought to be. The clothes, the fads. You know, when I was 9 years old, you could buy a brand new Chevrolet car for less than you could buy a black and white TV. In 1945, I heard just on the news recently, someone telling it, well, I was 9 years old, you could actually buy a brand new Chevrolet car for less than you could buy a black and white TV, and they were big old long things. Now, you could take that car in 1945, back up, and hit that tree out there going 10 miles an hour, and you'd probably crush that tree. It'd bounce off. You may bend the bumper. But you let me go 10 miles an hour and hit that car sitting right out there, I mean, it's a major catastrophe. They make those things to wear out. And a lot of things are made in life that way. And so you need to learn to, in your spending, is to buy value, buy things that last. Maybe not always the top of the line, maybe just below it. You don't, if you're buying a washer and dryer, you may not need all the bells and whistles. But you want to buy something that lasts. Even as far as clothes, there are certain things that are always going to be in. There are a lot of fatty stuff that comes along. You don't want to buy fads. You want to buy things that will last. Okay? And the other thing, let me just say this about spending. Learn to shop with coupons. You know, I wish I'd brought this along. When Sandra and I teach us our little course on preparation for marriage, we oftentimes will bring this and just show this long list. Sandra will go to the grocery store, and maybe here's a bill, $75, and we paid $48 for it. Because she'll wait, she'll clip coupons every Sunday. She gets a Sunday paper, she clips the coupons, then there's double coupon. I mean, we have gone out of Safeway with these big liter Cokes, with a basket full of them, and we paid 9 cents a piece for them to use for our team meetings and things. Because we wait, and one time they ran clip, you know, triple coupons, and we had these coupons. And you know, also, like in Norman today, Walmart grocery store has will match anybody's price. So right before we came here, just a week or so before, Wright's grocery store advertise these real nice tomatoes for 99 cents a pound. Well, they're $2.39 at Walmart. So Sandra happens to be at Walmart shopping. She takes a little paper with them, and they'll match anybody. So the lady in front of her, if she's buying tomatoes, she pays $2.39 a pound for them. Sandra paid 99 cents. You know the people in America who shop most with coupons? You think, oh, it's the poor. People that make over $70,000 a year because they've got some sense. Let me just say this about simple thing like grocery shopping. You go in a grocery store, do you know that the highest priced items of a certain thing are at eye level? You're looking for pinto beans in a can. The highest priced ones are at eye level. You look down here, and whatever grocery store we shop, we learn what is the store brand. Because the store brand is always cheaper. And a lot of times it's just as good. Maybe been made by the same people. Okay? So learn some things about shopping. You know, if you come to our home, the kitchen table where you would sit with six chairs and the buffet over here, we paid $65 for it. We bought it in a garage sale. Now, especially early in marriage, your kids are going to pick up a hammer and beat on the furniture anyway. You don't need brand new furniture. Watch for sales. You have to have a chest of drawers. You can find it in a garage sale. Well, you paid $35 for it. It's not exactly what you want. But later you find a better one. Well, you buy it, you can sell this one. I mean, we've got furniture in our house that we have used for 35 years that I can sell for more tomorrow than I paid for. Now, look, and you do that in areas, nice areas of town where people are moving and things like that. It's amazing. I rented a house one time in Dallas. I was single at the time, had a training program, had 12 guys to live with me one summer. We furnished a 5-room house, and we did it with very few dollars, and every guy had a desk. And then later when we got through, we sold it, got all of our money back and some more, basically. And so learn to do things like that to save money. You can keep upgrading, and you can have very nice stuff that way. You bet. You bet. I mean, businesses do it all the time. You manufacture this. If you don't sell it for more than you made for it, you lose money. Nothing wrong with that. I didn't cheat the people. They had the price on it. They saw it was comparable to what other people were selling. So no problem with that. Now, you don't cheat people. You know, I don't sell them in front of a drawer and it doesn't have bottom in it or something like that.
An example would have to be expensive cars. I mean, people pay $100
for a car. Okay, let me tell you. See, the car sitting out here in the parking lot. Park Avenue, as good a car as you can buy. In fact, as I checked, the fellow, the best engine ever made in America is in the Park Avenue. $34,000 new. We paid $11,000 for that, and that's the most I've ever paid for a car. And then I need to get rid of my old car, other old car. So, and by the way, when you get married, guys, have two cars. Don't leave your wife stranded. Bob Anderson told me one time there had been more tears in our family over one car than any one single area. If your wife is home with the children, she may have to go to the doctor. Don't leave her trapped without a car. So I wanted another car, and we found that this Park Avenue, I mean, it's got everything on it that you can imagine. It's a good, safe car. It's heavy, but it's not real big. Excellent gas mileage. And so I needed another car. So I saw in the paper this little ad, and it said, Park Avenue, 1995, high mileage. I told Sandra, I said, nobody will even look at it. They're afraid of mileage. I'm not afraid of mileage. If you take care of a car, go to Cuba. Go to Australia. Cars, that your car that was worn out that you sold, they buy them, ship them to Australia. All over Australia, all over New Zealand, all over Cuba. Ford, Chevrolets, 250,000 miles on them. What do you think? They're worn out. And see, like this lady, we think, well, it's a battery last month. And you know, and then it's a, you know, it's a starter this month. Well, yeah. But if you buy a new car, it's $350 every month forever. I'm going to read you something. Let's suppose you buy a new car. You start working when you're 25. You work until you're 65. That's 40 years. You buy a new car every 4 years. You start when you're 25, you're going to drive that car for 4 years, and you're going to sell it, trade it in on a new one, pick up a payment, the difference, because I assure you there will be a difference. And you, that would mean you would buy 10 new cars during your lifetime. Okay? Now, this is in print, because you wouldn't believe me. So I got it in print for you, okay? All right. Let's suppose your payments on a car are $265.80 a month. During your lifetime, you will pay $127,584 in car payments. Okay? Now, at the interest rate may be different, but at this particular one, that's car dealer taking this money that you paid him, not getting even a fraction of a percent higher interest rate than you're paying him, and he will make $3,641,550. That's how much money he will make. He has never had a bigger investment. If you buy that car and leave Mexico and they can never find you, he never had very much money invested. But he will take the same interest money that you paid. He'll make $3.6 million at the same rate of interest you paid. It didn't cost you $126,000 to drive that car. It cost you $3.5 million to trade cars every 4 years. If you had taken that money, did what the automobile dealer did, and put it out at interest. Now, this interest at this time was 12.5%. You say, oh, it's not that high now. And that's right, it's not that high. So he might not make but $2 million off of it. So the point of it is, I'd say this about cars. Buy used cars and pay cash. Used cars, pay cash. Used cars, pay cash. After Sandra and I married, she was making payments. We had to make them for another 2-3 months. I've never, since that time, I've never made a car payment in my life. Now, one day, we needed another car. We didn't have much money. And so I shopped around. We had $400 to our name. And I needed a car because we had a baby. I didn't want to leave Sandra home without a car. And so I looked around. I had $400. And I found an old 37 Plymouth. Something like that. 47 Plymouth, I guess it was. In a car. And this guy just liked to find old cars and tinker with them. Painted it. It looked nice. But he said, Max, don't ever drive it over 45. Because if you do, it won't make it. I mean, in some of the, you can't even get parts for it. But it was a real sharp-looking car. But you know, I looked between the BSU and the house, and BSU and the grocery store, and BSU and the church, which is most places we would go. And there wasn't any place where the speed limit was over 45. So I bought that car for $400. And I drove it. And one day, after several months, I'm driving to work, and it dies. So I get out, get my little briefcase, walk on to work. And I call the junkyard, and I say, come get it. You can have it. I mean, it wasn't worth it. But in the meantime, we'd save the money to be able to buy another car. Now, I told you about, I see this car in the paper, and it says high mileage. I said, Sandra, nobody look at it. I went to see it, and the guy was asking, I think, $6,900. I offered him $5,000. He said, well, I still owe $5,200 on it, but I'll take what I owe. So I bought that car for $5,200, had 118,000 miles on it. I would get in it today and head to California and then drive to New York and probably have absolutely no problem. It looks nice. It's good. It's got leather seats. It's got bells and whistles. It's got everything you can imagine on it. I paid $5,200 for it. Let somebody else take the high depreciation. The first $30,000 that somebody puts on the car, half of the value of that car is gone. You know, I went up, we had a guy in the Bible study years ago. His dad owned a Chevrolet dealership in Oklahoma City. One time I was needing a car. I called him and went up there. I was talking to the used car lot man, and he said, as long as I live, I will never own another new car. He said, you wouldn't believe the sum of the cars. This little lady, her husband told her, we trade cars every 2 years. He was in the oil business. We trade cars every 2 years. Well, he's dead, so she's going to trade cars every 2 years. It's a half a mile from her house to the grocery store. It's a mile to the little Baptist church where she goes. And that's about it for her. She's up in her 70s. And she puts that car in the garage, and boy, has all the time. So now it's got 7,000 miles on it. It's 2 years old. She's going to trade it in. You talk about a steal. Now, I'm just saying, you look at the number of cars are in the world. They are tremendous buying. And you say, well, you might get a limit. You might. My father-in-law, in recent years, bought one new car in his whole life. One new car. And he got so tired of taking it back to the dealer, because every time there's a little noise, you want to get it fixed. And finally, after a year, you sold it. It said, drive me nuts. Well, I got a car, got a scratch on it. I mean, I buy them when they got a scratch on them, you know. So somebody scratch it, no big deal. I don't panic. Okay, and really, you know, the biggest thing in America, the waste of money, is on cars. That's one of the biggest things. Okay? So, learn to save. Now, let me show you what happens in America to people. I want to show you what happens to poor people. Now, this is not original with me. You can find this, and I'll recommend a book to you in a little bit. Here's what happens to the poor in America. They have a job, maybe. And that job, as a result of the job, they have some income. And then, you know what? They have expenses. So it comes in as income and goes right out as expenses. It goes out for rent. It goes out for food. It goes out for clothes. It goes out for entertainment, for debt retirement. That's what happens to poor people. Whatever comes in here goes in here. Not only that, 80% of people in America owe more than they're worth. 80% of people in America owe more than they have in assets. Not only does they have income, but they spend more than they make.
And this is called debt. That's what happens to poor people in America. Let me show you what happens to the middle-income people. They have a job. They have income. They have expenses. But you know what? Oh, we're smarter. We've learned something new. Not only do we have, and a lot of our money goes out of expense, you still have rent or house payments or food or clothes. You never get away from having some of these as long as you live. But oh, we have learned something. We now know something about liabilities. And so we get liabilities. Oh, we got a boat sitting in the backyard. Now, you think, well, if all of a sudden you have to list your assets, you list that boat as an asset. You know the only one it's an asset for? The bank. That's the one it's an asset for. Because you're making payments on it. Or every year that boat has to have tags. You know the difference between an asset and a liability? Now, a book I'm going to recommend to you later, John Crawford, one of our students who's now in seminary, got a finance degree from OU. He said, I learned more about finance from this one book than I did from a finance degree at the University of Oklahoma. I'll tell you the name of the book in a minute, okay? So here's what happens to America. Comes in, income goes out of expense. All right, comes down here as a liability and then goes out as expense. We get liabilities. A liability is anything that takes money out of your pocket. Anything that takes money out of your pocket is liability. In a sense, a house is a liability. I'm not saying you shouldn't own a house, but a house is liability. Every month, have utilities. You have upkeep. You have insurance. So a house is a liability. Now, it's good to have a house, but just face it, it's a liability. Anything that takes money out of your pocket is a liability. You own a car, it's a liability. You have to have insurance, gas, repairs, that sort of thing. And so we load up on liabilities.